Episode 1170, There's Something About Severance, Season 2, Episode 3.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono, and Severance is here to say, nice theories. Here's what you can do with them.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree.
I love it.
Last week we had a lot of predictions, and like, this week they're like, nah, here's everything that's actually happening.
I mean, the big one, like Dylan's family, the whole family room thing. It's like, oh, the second I saw his wife in there, I'm like, fake.
Yes.
Not a chance.
They're making us feel like it was fake. Like they knew we would think it's fake.
Yes.
And then they made it, so the twist is that it's real.
Exactly. It was fantastic. Because even like, and this is why I messaged you last night when I was rewatching, and I said I've enjoyed every episode more on a rewatch so far. And I think this is a big part of why. Because take that scene, the first time I'm watching it, you're kind of in theory land.
Yeah.
Is this real? Is it not? And the whole time I'm thinking, she's not real. And then the very next scene after that whole sequence is over is them at their home. And it's like, oh, well, it was real. So now the second time I watch it, you can actually watch the scene for what it is. And it's a better experience. But it's just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Everything the show, every expectation you have, the show just keeps upending it.
Should we talk about some others?
I mean, the biggest one is last week I sat here. It was like the whole series is going to end when Mark gets reintegrated. And it appears that that's where we wound up at the end of this week's episode, which is fantastic.
We also were speculating earlier this season, what's the real deal with Gemma? Are we dealing with a clone or a real person that's come back to life somehow? Apparently, definitely her, according to Dr.
Rigavi.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And even in the moment where Rigavi, like they're outside the car and she's revealed, you know, I saw Gemma and she's like, I can help you if you let me reintegrate. I thought to myself, in that split second, Mark's going to say no, and then the rest of this season, his character arc, it's going to be him getting to the point where he says yes, because that's what other shows would do.
Mm-hmm.
And he just instantly jumps to yes, but it worked for his character because that's how much he loves his wife.
Exactly. And the whole show, since the first scene we see Audi Mark where he's crying, he's dealing with this emotional distress over losing his wife. He took the whole job because he lost his wife. His whole world is upside down because his wife is dead. So if he's given a chance to see her again, of course. He doesn't hesitate barely a second before saying yes.
Yeah. What I really... Although, go ahead.
There was this aspect of me, and I think I might have texted this
you. You did.
There was an aspect of it that kind of felt like too sudden. I mean, I trust the storytellers. Like, we love this show, so they must have a grander plan. But that does seem like something that's happening mid to late in the show, and so we're getting it right now, so what's next? It just... Is he going to be a spy? Like an integrated spy for the rest of the season? I don't know.
So, two thoughts on that. Number one, we don't actually know where he's at. We know he was going through the reintegration process, but we don't know how well it worked or what... We don't know what version of Mark we're going to have come next episode. Because the show ends with him going with the montage.
Wait, when you say montage, I've only watched it once. I remember them flipping back and forth.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And we're on, you know, we're on the conference room table.
And then we hear Petey saying, who are you? And that's the end of the episode.
I imagine the next episode will be the early days of Mark S.
But we don't know that for sure.
No, we don't know
that for sure. So what I'm saying is that his reintegration process might not be as cut and dry as maybe it seems. But the other thing is, and if the show drops the ball... Like, if we look back and say they had nothing else this season, well, we can reevaluate this criticism and say, no, they shouldn't have done that so soon. But what it feels like to me, which I like, is that the show is expanding its parameters for what you expected the show to be about. It's building the context.
Okay, right? Tell me more.
So like, I've mentioned this series that I want to do a deep dive on eventually, Book of the New Sun by Gene Wolfe.
Mm-hmm.
It's a four-book series, and one of the things I really like about it, and he's doing the same thing, I'm reading a parallel series by him right now called Book of the Long Sun, and in both of these series, each book ends with what you think is the context of the story, and then the next book reveals a bigger layer that recontextualizes everything, and so on and so forth. Like the first book of the New Sun, and there's no spoilers in this, but it's essentially just the main character trying to get out of the city. Mm-hmm. It's a very small story. By the end of the series, it's cosmic and interdimensional in its scope.
Oh, that sounds fun.
So I feel like Severance is kind of doing the same thing. Like, you thought this was the context of the show. Now we're going to go to that next layer, and that next layer, we're going to keep expanding what you think this show is about. Mm-hmm. That's what I think is happening, but reserve the right to criticize in hindsight if it turns out they don't have a plan.
It does give off that feel in the sense of just in these early episodes, we can already see season one, we're just dealing with this one office and a few people that are severed. We're starting to meet some others here in this kind of almost empty severed level. And now season two, we're finding out offices across the globe.
Yeah.
Lots more happening here than we were given in this first season. And I'm really stuck on this idea that there's more to the city that they're all living in than we've been told. I just feel like, are they living? I'm not saying prison. It just feels like the city of Kier, there's something different there than other parts of the world are experiencing. I've been really, you and I have never talked about the technology that's being used.
Okay, yeah. There's a few things I wanted to talk about before we got into the episode, and that was one of them.
Okay, yes, because on one hand, they have cell phones, modern technology, but on the other hand, you see them using older computers, older televisions. I'm just trying to think.
All the cars are old.
All the cars, yeah. So there's
like all the cars are old.
Okay.
I don't know if you.
No, I didn't pick up on that.
I didn't notice this until a couple episodes ago, and then I forgot to bring it up. But like Cobell's car, she has a tape deck in there.
Yes.
Go pay attention to the cars.
I did.
The cars are like from the 80s or 90s.
Yes. The tape deck was another thing that sparked this idea. Like, I'm thinking of the TVs that we see them watching, the tape deck. Yeah. So everything is older. I don't know exactly how to put it. I'm not saying prison, but there seems like this city might be enclosed in some way that we haven't fully been told.
Well, Cobell drove out of it.
But she didn't really. To me, it felt like she sees a sign of this other city that she could
Salt
go to.
Neck.
And all of a sudden, she spins right around. And you might think she changed her mind. On the other hand, she might just know there's nowhere to go. So, like, Truman Show has a similar feel where you can't get out.
I feel like the technology stuff, and I could be proven wrong, but to me it feels more like an aesthetic choice than it does a clue. But the world as a whole does have an offness to it. So this is one of the other things that might tie into it. I wanted to bring up, there's a lot of visual and plot references that I noticed in this episode in particular that we haven't talked about. Some of them are pertaining to the whole thing, but here's, I think it just informs some thematically of where the show's going. So the first one, which has been apparent this season and last season, but really this season, is the hallways, how they're maze-like, is an homage to The Shining.
Oh.
Because that's what Kubrick did. Kubrick did the same. Remember in The Shining how you're following Danny on the scooter? This tricycle through the hall. So like Kubrick's forcing you to feel like you're going through this hotel, but it's an illusion. Like you're not actually able to track it. It's a maze. Somebody did the scene that has Mark S. and Helly walking through the halls this week. Like if you trace their route, it loops back in on itself.
Really?
Okay. And so it doesn't work. So the whole thing's Shining. I don't think you've ever played, haven't played the game because you don't play video games, but are you familiar with Portal?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've heard of Portal. I've watched people play it. Yes.
Strong Portal vibe in Severance.
Wait, isn't there an AI that oversees things at Portal?
Yeah, GLaDOS.
Any chance that we're going to see some sort of AI superpower?
I don't think so.
Don't you think that that's what the disembodied Kier is?
Not an AI.
Well, in a sense, aren't disembodied like thoughts and memories essentially an AI?
It's splitting hairs a little, but because it originated as a person, I'm going to make a distinction. But yeah, everything from like the board wants you to know how joyously you're appreciated or whatever all of that has Portal vibes. Okay, things specific to this episode. All the shots at the beginning of Cobell on the snowy road, and I thought this immediately, and then I saw other people saying it on Reddit, Fargo. Like, I know you don't like Fargo, but, like, there's the snowy, desolate countryside road, very much Fargo.
Pause on that, because I feel like something that goes along with my, the city is trapped in some way, I think it never is not winter there. I just have the sense that it's always
it's Narnia.
A gloomy, foggy winter always in Kier.
So I thought about that.
And why?
And I don't know if we've seen enough of the show time-wise, because this now we know this season picked up right where the other one left off. So we, our scope of the show time-wise is very small, but definitely that's an aesthetic that they're going for. Two things with the goat door, and we'll talk more about the goat door in there, but Alice in Wonderland.
Okay, yep, I could see
and
that.
And I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, being John Malkovich.
I have seen it, but only once.
Okay.
So, so I know that scene where he's going to, that's how he gets into the mine.
Yeah,
right?
Immediately I thought of being John Malkovich there. When we're in the goat room, which we're going to talk about, the guy who's wearing like the black goat outfit.
That, the first time I saw that, I was like, what the heck?
You're right.
They didn't let you know it was a costume at first.
Right. Feels almost like the goat and the witch. There's this main goat and the witch called Black Phillip.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Felt like a reference to that. And then this one I did not pick up on, but I saw screenshots to confirm it. So Dylan's wife is wearing an outfit that is identical to Pam Beasley in The Office.
Okay. What is that indicating to us? Just that seems like a nod to Office, not like a clue.
I don't know that any of these are clues. So, I take all of these more as thematic references. Like The Shining, it's not meant to be like, oh, this is a clue. Lumen's just like the Overlook Hotel, but it's meant to be a nod to the disorientation that Kubrick used.
Although you said perhaps we are going to find out there's something supernatural happening. If that's the case, which I'm not sold on yet, perhaps there's experiments happening to isolate people with powers to be able to see the numbers in a different way. And in that case, Mark might have some sort of special, I'm not saying telepathic, but something with his mind. He thinks in a way that's different than normal people.
It could be.
I think that's a possibility.
All right. One more preliminary observation before I'm ready to talk about the actual episode. Opening titles, which we talked about at length last time, but this is something I didn't notice until last night when I was rewatching. When it goes into the elevator that we now know is the export hall.
And we're going to find out how to get there, I'm guessing.
So it's going down and the doors are shutting and it zooms in super fast. Who's standing in the elevator?
Guess what? I have no idea. I can't even picture it.
You would think it's Gemma, but it's not. It's Helly.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but Helly is in the export elevator going down.
Okay.
In the opening titles.
Well, another, you know, we talked about how perhaps downstairs there's some place that people can live. I could see Helly living there. Wait a second. I'm saying Helena. Helena, that's her family's organization. Why not?
Could be.
All right.
All right.
Let's dive into the episode, because the first thing I want to ask you about is Milchick. Can we get the...
What I have divided up is I have... Because everybody kind of splits up. So I have the different narratives, notes on all of those, and then everything at the end.
All right. Since you have your notes, can I just ask the question? So let's start with Milchick, because this is...
This was great.
So we've seen him have sympathy towards the others, but also he had to have a kind of a iron fist type ruling at the same time. But this is the first time I felt like he had any sort of anger, or that's not the right word. He has some negative feelings towards those he works for in a way that we hadn't seen before.
It's I wrote that it feels like he's cracking. Like the balloons, he was mad. When he comes across the balloons and they're deflated, he's mad. And then we get to the whole painting scene, which is hilarious.
Yeah, but what was it about the paintings that drove him over the edge?
Well, it's incredibly offensive.
Yeah, in general, a lot of what they do is offensive, but he seemed like a true believer. So to you and I, prior to this episode, we would have thought this is probably something he'll love.
Right.
But he's not a true believer as much as we thought, maybe.
Yeah, I think they're hinting that there's more to both him and Natalie's backstory.
But that's something between them?
It could be. That's what I thought at first. They kind of have a moment after the board's off the phone.
I think the moment was she was seeing something different in his eyes, and she was afraid.
Like, he that's seemed not like how he was, I read it at all.
He seemed like he was going to snap on her. She seemed uncomfortable, like she didn't feel safe.
See, I read it completely different.
Tell me more.
I read it as, once the board's off the phone, they are both silently acknowledging that something here is very messed up.
Oh, but they can't, about the paintings?
About the paintings, yeah, and in general.
Okay.
But without being able to acknowledge it out loud.
Okay.
It's like, she's this mouthpiece for the board, so she can't actually say it, and he can't actually say it. But whatever their motives are, there's cracks in the foundation.
Even with Natalie, then?
Even with Natalie, yeah. I very much took that scene that way.
Okay. Yes, I should be rewatching the episodes, but I just watch them once each, so I'll have to do a rewatch like you.
We got his first name.
Seth. We knew that, though.
Did we?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we knew Seth.
Okay, I don't remember hearing Seth. But we do have to talk about the paintings. First of all, there's a whole cure cycle, and you could be painted. They could be combined with you. It was very funny. Like, when I saw the Cure portrait that's him and Milchick, I started laughing because that was very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to make of those. Like, that was so bizarre.
Yeah.
It was so bizarre. Weird theory. Like, is there a clue where Cure, if we're dealing with some type of transfer of consciousness, could Cure be wanting to join himself to everybody?
Hmm.
Like, is there a... Is Kier's consciousness a virus that wants to spread through everyone?
Natalie brought up that she has some of her own.
Yes.
It would be interesting to see what those look like.
I hope we see more versions of the Kier paintings. It was just fantastic.
Milchick ends up putting them in the closet, top shelf.
Yeah, he can't throw them away.
Doesn't want to look at them ever again.
Yeah.
Is the reason he doesn't want to look at them because they're offensive, or is there something deeper?
I think there's something deeper, but I do think that, it's obviously in horrible taste. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically blackface, albeit in a painting, but still, you know, our CEO is white. I think your college president is white. If you were to have a black, coworker who got a gift that was the painting of the CEO and his face combined in like some weird blackface thing, of course that would be deeply offensive, but I do think they're hinting that there's something deeper going on.
Mm, okay.
Something has unsettled Milchick. I thought that was a great scene. I also think it's very funny with the board says, hello. Her whole cadence in that scene was just great.
Yes.
All right, that's Milchick.
All right, who do you want to go to next? I'm thinking Irv, because he doesn't have as much.
Yeah.
But what he has is great. Because
what
we're
he
gonna,
has is great.
We're going to find... Is it Felicia?
Yes.
With Felicia's help, we're going straight to the export elevator.
So before we get to the export elevator, when he's just flipping through things, he comes across a painting of Cure with a cauldron, which you could take as industry, like a giant, steel-working, metal-working thing, or you could take it as a cult, witch's brew type of thing. So I think the show is very deliberately walking that line.
Okay.
The big reveal here, though, is the exports hall. Fun thing about that, why does the export elevator go down? If you're exporting things, why are they going down?
Yes. This is a good question. Does it make you wonder, where is Lumen? Like, where is Lumen situated?
It more makes me wonder, kind of what I was talking about last time, that there's more to Lumen than just the main floor and the severed floor.
Yeah.
Lumen's not a binary.
So the one that goes down, we've talked about it as the third floor, or we could call it something else if you want, but don't we agree that people are, they go back to their normal selves on that floor?
I think that's a theory.
So if we know, let's say we know this, because we've been putting the pieces together, there's a third floor, the basement floor, where people go and the exact same thing happens where they snap back to it and they're back to themselves. So Gemma probably lives there as herself. Like I said, they live there. They don't leave. So what are you exporting? Supplies that you would need to live and survive.
I think that whatever the specifics turn out to be, they're definitely setting something along those lines up. The other interesting thing here is Irv doesn't know when he saw the export hall.
Right. So what does that mean to you?
I don't know.
To me, I thought he has this version of Irv that he knows.
Right.
But what if there was a prior Irv that something happened and they had to erase that one and start over? Of course, Irv on the outside wouldn't know any difference.
Yep.
But there might be a new Innie Irv, I've been saying, from before the show started.
That could also be what happens with Mark this season. They need him for Cold Harbor. They can't fire him like Petey. They find out he's been reintegrated. Do they reset him? That's somewhere we could go. Now watch that theory. You'll get blown away
by next week.
15 minutes into next week's episode.
You know, another thing she said, Felicia said, how do you know about the export elevator? And she said, we used to go ourselves.
And now they send somebody.
So people from OD or OND,
OND
have been down to, potentially been down to that other floor.
That's not what she said.
Okay.
She said they've been to the elevator.
Okay. So they brought it to the elevator, sent things on their way. They never wrote it down.
Well, it's possible. Her words are ambiguous. So it's possible they wrote it down, but she doesn't confirm that.
Okay.
We'll see. That's all I had for Irv.
Well, it was moving that, like, how, if you think back to season one, their interactions where she was nervous and worried about, was it macro data?
Yeah.
The MDR. Yeah. It's nice to have now this moment between the two where they're mourning the death of their friend.
Yes. It's great.
Yeah. And Irv's artistic talents from the outside are now making their way inside.
Right. All right. Should we go to Dylan?
Yeah, Dylan is who I'm thinking next.
Wait on the goat room.
Yeah.
Dylan's scene was great. I like that he seemed genuinely concerned for Miss Wong. You know, they keep bringing up that she's a child. Like, but they moved it slightly beyond the joke this time because he's raising a legitimate point. Like, what is going on with her? Why is she here, given that she's a child?
And do you think he cares even more now because now he knows he himself is a father?
Yeah. Did you notice his reluctance to join in the search for Gemma?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because he knows he has this big benefit if he's
correct,
if he plays good.
So I think that we're getting set up for the sides to shift a little bit. And just like Cobell seems like a natural candidate to eventually come over to the good guys, I think Dylan's being set up to be a Judas.
Oh, I would hate that.
He'll eventually come around, but they've got their hooks in him. Like, this plan worked.
Well, yes. Yeah, he's all in at this point. And his wife, Gretchen, right?
Yes.
Gretchen even reveals to him that they're really the family's counting on Dylan G to do a good job because the Audi Dylan is not very reliable.
No, he's not dumb, but he is a screw up.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we figure out. One of the things I love about this show is the odd specificity. So the fact that the visit is 18 minutes long, like that's what he's earned. That's just so good. It's so much funnier and it sticks in your head. The fact that if it was 15 minutes, it wouldn't be entertaining. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's an 18 minute visit is perfect. The fact that they have Miss Wong listening in on everything is great, too.
Or she just chimes in.
Yes. Yeah. So Gretchen's about to reveal that Milchick's first name is Seth.
Well, she does reveal it.
Well, she says,
who's Seth?
Yeah. She doesn't reveal who Seth is.
It is telling, though, that, I don't know about you. I imagine your boss doesn't visit your home very often.
Infrequently.
But would your wife be able to identify your boss by, your top boss by name?
So I assume that it's not because of that, but more because when she got there, he gave her the sack to put her stuff in. And he probably introduced himself at that point. Because that's how it comes
up. We never saw that, though, right?
No, but that's what he says, nice sack, because she's got this clear plastic bag. And that's where she says, Seth gave me this to put my stuff in.
Okay. I kind of got the sense that she possibly knew him from the outside world.
I mean, he has visited their home with the fruit basket.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, we know Milchick's been there once.
You know, you'd said that there was a theory that perhaps that she had some sort of disability.
Yeah, it turned out to be wrong.
I mean, that really seemed like out of nowhere.
There was good evidence. But this is actually, this is a great object lesson in theorizing what this show is doing. And I know you love Lost, but one of the flaws that Lost had is they'd set up clues like that and then just leave it for months, seasons, years, and sometimes forever. And so the thing about clues, whether they're intentional red herrings or just misinterpreted lines, is that when they're just fester, they become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger in your mind. Whereas this show is like, oh, we threw out, you know, we're not showing you Dylan's wife and we're hinting that she might not be real. And then he's asking about health care and all of that. So she must be disabled. That's Then it's a week later and it's blown out of the water. It doesn't fester. It's like a game between the theorizers and the show at that point, rather than the Lost thing. Like, you know, we're just going to artificially drag things out.
It's interesting that you bring it up like that about how something small can build and build, because I know we're going to get to the goats, but in season one, I heard Ben Stiller in his podcast talking about how they didn't necessarily see the goat scene as a gigantic part of season one.
Right.
But that's something that the fans have really latched onto and just they want to know more about the goats.
Right.
And so
now we have a goat.
So yeah. So now I feel like they probably made it much bigger for season two in response to how the fans just, I don't want to say overreacted, but something resonated with them about why is there a room full of goats?
Right. I love Dylan asking, we live on a cattle ranch, after he sees the old-timey picture.
Why do they show an old-timey photo? Well, like, what's the purpose of that? That made me feel all the more like this is not real.
Right. So by the end of this, and then contrasting this to the scene we see of them later, she's going to fall in love with Annie Dylan. Like, that's where this is going. She's going to cheat on Audi Dylan with any Dylan.
Okay. Okay. So you think she doesn't, like, is something, do you think she's having marriage problems with Audi Dylan?
Yeah, I mean.
He does seem like.
She's working the night shift. Mm-hmm. He works the day shift. He doesn't seem that involved. You know, and now it's like she gets a new version of her husband.
Hmm. Okay. I can see that.
So that'll be lots of fun. That's all I had for Dylan.
Not much with Helly this week, unless you just talk about Helly and Mark together.
Helly and Mark. Should we talk about them, or should we talk about Cabell first?
Let's save the goats for last.
Okay. Well, let's save the end for last.
Okay.
So let's talk about Cabell, and then the goats, and then we can talk about everything that happens after.
All right. Cabell senses danger, big time, and so did I.
This was a really good scene where she comes back, tries to force Milchick out. The fear of the board, like, that's something we haven't seen to that degree. There's been nervousness, but this was like outright fear of the board.
Wait, talk more about that.
So Helena says, I'm going to arrange for the board to talk to us. She allegedly does, but we don't see the other side of that phone call. They're heading into the building. That's when Cabell walks away, gets in her car, and leaves.
Yeah. I mean, they wanted us to feel the same as Cabell, and there is this feeling of, if I go in there, I am not leaving.
Correct. So what in the world is it about the board?
I didn't necessarily feel like it was a fear of the board. I felt like it was a fear of whatever Helena had planned.
Cabell was comfortable challenging Helena to her face. It was when Helena said, let's get the board involved and arrange for that to happen is when she freaks out. So I think it is something about the board that she's responding to.
I mean, I'm not positive where we go with Cabell next.
I don't either. Not to Salt Neck. It's like the 18-minute thing, the fact that the sign for the city says Salt Neck.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a weird... There probably is a real Salt Neck out there somewhere, but that's such a weird name for a town.
I want to stand by, she couldn't have got there. Or that's not a place she can really go.
I'm open to it. I'm not convinced. I haven't seen anything definitive.
You know, we haven't talked about Charlotte Cabell. Do you know who I'm talking about? We see these, like, health bracelets that she had in her shrine at home.
Yeah.
And I think she brought them with in the car. This is her mom, we're guessing. Right. We don't know for sure. But any thoughts on
that? There's lots of theories about her mom out there.
Do you have any personal ones or not yet?
I do not.
Okay.
I do think that both Cabell and Milchick are innies who became permanent people.
Okay.
I do think that's going to be revealed.
I could see that.
I think that that's where, like, the true believer but still some trepidation is coming from. They are innies whose existence is dependent on Lumen.
So maybe the reason they'd be afraid of going into that building is stick them in the elevator, it's over.
Exactly. Like, there's definitely a sense of, I think we're going to see of the show is thematically driving towards the union of the self, but that innies versus outies is going to be a component of it as well.
Are you saying, like, as much as there might be a war, like, yeah, innie versus outie, like...
So, Cold Harbor, and I don't know the specifics of it, is a reference to the Civil War.
Okay.
And a Civil War is, so, properly understood, the U.S. Civil War was not a Civil War, because a Civil War is a war over for control of the same ground. You know, the U.S. Civil War was the South wanted to, you know, secede. So, but taking it more literally, if you get innie versus outie, that is as primal a civil war as you can possibly get. It's two people fighting over one body.
Yes. So you're not saying like a bunch of innies fighting a bunch of outies.
No, no,
you're
no.
You're saying it's a civil war in your own
correct.
Self.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So Milchick and Cobell have taken over the body. They have effectively killed their the other self.
Yeah.
The shadow self has killed the original self, mm-hmm. in the Jungian terms. And so if the show is driving towards reintegration, or not even reintegration, but integration, I know the show calls it reintegration, but in a Jungian term, the self with the shadow integrating is psychologically the desired state.
This does remind me of season one. Cobell's talking to Mark, or Audi Mark, and when he reveals he's thinking about quitting his job, he doesn't know this is his boss. She's like, do it. Get out of there.
Yeah.
We know she likes the Audi version of Mark more than the innie version. So perhaps, Mark, there's a danger to Audi Mark that if he gets too high up at Lumen, he's gone, and innie Mark gets to stay the permanent version.
Correct.
So that line going all the way back could have just been her trying to save Audi Mark.
Yeah. And I think what we're going to get set up is that, like, as the audience, you look at Dylan, we're going to be sympathetic to any Dylan because he's loving and sweet and everything. And then Audi Dylan is this screw up. Mm-hmm. But the show is thematically driving us to the Jungian view of that it's the union of the self, not so, dividing one part from another.
So you guess that the show might end with Mark integrating, but... Another way to look at it is maybe the end is some sort of technology that instantly integrates everybody.
Yeah, something like that.
Like, sends out a signal across the globe. Anybody who has the severed surgery, now they're instantly integrated.
If the show ends on a Deus Ex Machina of a radio wave automatically integrating everybody, that would be disappointing. But I think thematically, you're on to a good conclusion.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about the goats.
But why would they take dead people? Like, why would they take certain people? Like, is there something special about Gemma, or are they just looking for, do they just need volunteers?
That's where I think we don't have all the pieces to actually have a coherent theory.
Or is it Mark that's special, and that's their bargaining chip over Mark?
It could be. But they're not playing it. For it to be a bargaining chip, they have to let one version of Mark or the other know that that's the bargaining
chip.
Well,
he's been doing what he should be doing so far.
Yeah.
So when he stops doing what they want him to do, that's when they would hold it over his head.
We'll see. Okay. To feed the Helena Helly conspiracy, their whole near kiss in the hallway definitely feeds into that. Because in the first season, when they kiss, she initiates... Mm-hmm. Mark's sitting there awkwardly like a moron waiting for her to do that again, and she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's so awkward suggests that it's Helena.
Okay. I mean, I already do think it's Helena, but another way to interpret that could be she wants Mark to initiate this time. But we agree. If the twist, just like they did with Dylan's wife, if the twist says this is Helly, that she's acting kind of weird.
Yes. There's one big reason why I think it's Helena. Have you seen the episode titles?
I've been paying attention, but not close. Oh, is she alive?
No.
Who is alive?
Who is alive is this one, but they've released all the episode titles.
No, I have not looked ahead.
Do you want to know?
No, I don't want to know.
Okay. There is an episode title coming up that is very suggestive.
Okay.
But knowing how I'm batting so far, you know, it could be something completely different.
I was just thinking about episode titles, like... For this episode, for example, should we have actually called this There's Something About Severance, Who is Alive? But we already did season 2, episode 3. You know, like, that's been our I guess we could always switch it.
We can switch it whenever we want.
What do you feel? What do you like better? There's Something About Severance, Season 2, Episode 3, or There's Something About Severance, Who Is Alive?
Season 2, Episode 3 makes it a little easier,
yeah.
I think, in the future when you people are looking for a specific episode. Like, if they're looking for where's the Season 2 ones, they don't have to try and figure out which titles and which one.
All right, got it.
Okay. The goat door, we already talked about a little bit, but it's amazing. I love everything about this whole sequence in the goat room. I'm curious how you responded to it, because it had horror movie vibes to me.
Oh, no.
Big time.
I did not feel that. It had more like adventure, like intrigue, like what is at the end of this tunnel?
I mean, the tunnel part, yes, but once they actually get in there and we have Black Phillip guy, like, it felt...
Oh, yeah. It was definitely
scary.
Creepy.
Yeah,
or
scary.
When she rang the bell and they just all started coming out of nowhere. Because we've seen the landscape and it seemed to be relatively empty of humans.
Yes.
And then there's so many.
Right. Careful, there's poop is a great line. Do you remember what Gwendolyn Christie's character says when they first come in?
You might be interested in this. But I actually didn't know who that actress was, because I haven't seen Game of Thrones.
Oh.
Because I watched only season one of Game of Thrones.
That's
and she popped, yeah, so she pops up in season two. So
she was also in the Star Wars sequels as Captain Phasma.
But she wore a mask.
That was horrible.
So, interestingly, I was like, I kind of recognize this person, but who is this? And I was not able to identify her until I listened to the podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott, and they mentioned her. Actually, they featured her on that episode. So, okay, back to your original question.
So, do you remember what she asks?
Are you here to kill us?
Are you here to kill me?
Kill me, okay.
Okay, so I'm going to go a little nuts here. I've already said I think we're going to some type of sacrifice, and the goats are a part of it.
Okay.
I've also said I buy the consciousness transfer. I think those people are goats. Like, they are the consciousness of goats in human body. And they are some weird human-goat hybrid going on. And the reason she asks, are you here to kill me, is because people show up and take them away to be sacrificed.
Can I repeat back what I think you're saying?
Yes.
You're saying they put the brain of a goat into a human body.
The consciousness.
Okay. If you would have said the opposite, I could have been on board with that, which that also sounds crazy. But what if, as a punishment, they're moving the consciousness of a human into a goat? I think that is way more likely, because how is a... Let's just talk it out. What's this character's name? Do you know?
No.
Okay. Well, whatever her name is, how would a goat learn to talk?
Well, yeah, so it's probably some type of fusion between them, but they are definitely goat-like.
I didn't get that.
You didn't think that they're weird.
Well, they're severed and they live with goats. All they do is take care of goats.
There's something. The dude was wearing a black goat costume.
That kind of gave off like a scarecrow type feel to me. Like
the whole scene where they're surrounding them.
Yeah.
She said, "My innie enjoyed stargazing."
Yeah, I like that.
Which is something a goat would do. I got these people are not fully human.
Wow. Okay, I don't know if I totally agree. My guess would be the other way, that those goats that they're taking care of were human.
Maybe going in and out of goat bodies is like, there is something very off about those
people.
I mean,
they don't come to the sound of a bell.
Exactly.
But that could have just been part of the plan.
Exactly. Like, they were ready to kill them. Like, there was something very off about those people. Those were not just people who spend time around goats.
Okay, but when they said, are you here to kill me? Like, what she's actually thinking of is what we saw between OND and MDR. Like, when they made
the bellies was great.
Show me your bellies. We know that that's because they think there's a pouch that has a larva in
it. That proves nothing.
I don't remember, though, because Dylan and Irv heard that story. I don't remember if Mark and Helly know about the pouches.
Well, they didn't get any context. Fun fact, this is the show completely teasing us. We see Mark's navel, but we don't see Helly's, which says we can't tell if she's an innie or an outie.
Say that again. What do you mean I can't
tell?
We
don't see her belly button. So we can't tell if she's an innie or an outie. When they lift up their shirts, her skirt is pulled up too high. So you can't see her belly button in that scene.
Okay.
You can see Mark's.
But what does that mean about...
You can't tell if she's an innie or an outie.
Okay, what would the...
Like your belly button as an innie or an outie.
I know what you mean,
it's a joke.
Oh.
Like it's a joke. The show is playing a joke on us by... They know that people are going to be theorizing, like, is Helly really Helena? And so it's a little Easter egg that they're not revealing. They didn't show her navel in that scene so that you can't see if she's an innie or an outie.
What if it's something different? Hear me out.
What if she has a pouch?
What if she has a pouch?
That would be amazing.
What if she has a pouch, Ben? Did we just figure this out?
That would be fantastic.
I'm totally serious. What if her family has pouches?
I'd be so down with that. Like, that would be fantastic.
You said it might go horror. That would start to feel like...
That's really Cronenberg at that point.
Pouches. Remind me what they say in season one. The pouches have some sort of larva.
I don't remember.
That, like, takes its form and then kills people.
Yeah.
What if that's what the show's about? And it seemed like just a weird joke in season one.
That would be incredible.
I would hate that, actually.
I love that the goat room has a vending machine in it. Did you notice that?
Yes, because it's the office.
Yeah,
it's
right.
The same office space. Like, the best part is her desk with like a little platform in the middle of the field.
It's so great. That's a very Portal-esque thing. Like, the aesthetic of Portal is that you have like this office setting and then it gets increasingly messed up as you go through the game. But the office features are all still there.
Yeah, I like that too.
It's great. Okay, two other things that are suggestive of them not being fully human.
No, not this.
How so? And this is not a Reddit thing. Like, I'm sure there are Reddit theories. I haven't read any theories about this.
I have my first Reddit theory for the end of the episode.
Okay.
So just, we'll come back.
They're ready to call Milchek on them and or kill them. And the turning point is when Helly says, what if one of your goats went missing?
Mm-hmm.
It is like something about the goats. There's a personal connection.
Yes, but we know that shepherds and farmers have the same personal connection. There's a whole Bible story about it.
That scene was very biblical, too, in that sense. I'm just saying that there's something... These people are not shepherds.
Okay.
They are connected. The other thing is that when Miss Casey visited them, where did she do her sessions?
I don't know. Did they say?
They did. In their, quote, husbandry tanks.
I don't know what that is. Even.
I don't know what that is either.
Sounds like breeding, though, doesn't it?
It does. They're husbandry tanks.
Should I Google husbandry?
What is husbandry is like, in addition to just being a spouse, husbandry is like taking care of a farm, and so it's a farming term. But a husbandry tank is suggestive of something that's not entirely natural.
Oh, here we go. A husbandry tank refers to any aquarium or tank specifically designed and used for the dedicated care and maintenance of animals, where the focus is on monitoring their health, providing proper nutrition, and managing their environment to ensure their well-being. Okay. So it's a real thing.
Yeah. What is it?
Yeah, what is it at Lumen?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love this scene.
Yep, look at. Here are some things it's used for. Breeding and research. That's one thing it could be used for, but that's my big takeaway.
Okay, there you go. Breeding and research. These are human goat hybrids.
Okay. I guess we'll have to wait and see. What else you got there? I see you reading through your notes.
Yeah. Okay. That's all I have on the goats. Mammalian nurturables is their department. Should we go to...
Audi Mark?
So before Audi Mark...
Oh, Rickon.
We have Rickon and Natalie.
This is a great place to pause and talk about Rickon, because I sent you something today that was sent to me by our friend Sam Ferdin.
Yes.
It is amazing. It's free. It's the first 8 chapters of The UUR, free through Apple Books, the audiobook. It's Rickon reading it, and I was laughing out loud. I was totally into it, and there's just a few little Easter eggs
about
Severance in it. I don't think it's going to be like you need to read this to understand Severance. It's just for fun. But, I mean, 5 stars. It's only an hour. First 8 chapters, 1 hour, 5 stars. Loved it. I'm going to listen to it again for sure.
I'll listen to it before next week.
It's so good. And he mentioned some of his other books in the midst of that book. So I Googled something that one of the titles. And then when I Googled it with his name, my first Reddit for Severance came up. So before I know it, all of a sudden there I am.
Wow.
And guess what I found out? So it's Rick and Hale, but he has a middle name, I think.
Yeah.
In the book title or as an author. And the anagram is when you rearrange the letters, right?
Yep.
An anagram for Rickon's name is
Kier
Kin Heel.
Oh my goodness. That would be fantastic.
What? If he's an Egan?
Yes. Yes, something about that would be great.
Yeah, so just this was, first of all, if you just want to read the book, amazing. But secondly, if there's a clue that his full name is an anagram for Cure Can Heal, that's something.
That's
the
well
relationship
done.
Between Rickon and Devin doesn't actually make sense to me.
No, but it's funny.
It's funny, but what if it's more than that?
It could be. I kind of like it. I'd be open to it being more, but I also just kind of like it as a opposites attract type of thing.
Mm-hmm. But what if he was a part of choosing Mark, taking Gemma? Like, I don't want Rickon to become a villain.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that. I want him just to be the funny character he is, but
totally self-absorbed and naive, but also a prophet to the innies.
Yes. So okay. So there it is. So let's go now to. We see Natalie and Rickon connecting.
Yes, because they want him to write an innie version.
But what's their real motivation here? They're just keeping tabs on Marcus?
No, I think I actually think that this is what Lumen does, is that something gets smuggled in there rather than trying to fight it, they absorb it.
Okay.
So I think they're serious. And when they talk about innie verbiage, which is fantastic, I think they are talking about rewriting the book in such a way to control the innies more.
Okay. Of course, he's all for it.
Yeah, it's great. That whole scene is great. All right, Mark's plan. So starting at the beginning of the episode, we have him running, which kind of parallels the opening of the season a bit. And I love that we get the answer to why is he running in this episode, because if this was, you know, in between episodes, we'd have all sorts of wonderful theories about why is Mark running. Mm-hmm. And I also love that the plan is so stupid and it gets blown up.
It's very bad.
It's a very bad plan. In the middle of him talking to Devin, there's like this drop of a reference to his kindergarten teacher. Did you catch her name?
Man, no.
Mrs. Lustgarten. Which is fantastic.
There's a lot of good names in this show.
All right, that's where the show's so well written that it just drops names like Mrs. Lustgarten in the middle of a dialogue scene, and you don't like. I didn't notice till I rewatched last night. Mrs. Lustgarten. Okay, we've been saying, oh, Rikavi's going to come back at some point, and she did.
I know. I couldn't even remember her name, and there she is. She seems very angry. Like she's helpful.
I do like how angry she is as a character.
She's helpful, but she also seems like she's mad at these people that she hurt them.
Yeah. But, in fairness, Mark's plan was very dumb.
Yeah.
And she points out several flaws in it.
I do want to know more about her. What was her connection to Lumen? Why did she disconnect from them? Like, why is she so, like, invested in integrating people?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I think we'll find out more, but I love everything about this whole sequence that ensues. Starting on a comedic level, I love that she convinces Mark, I'm so much better at reintegration now, and then she's down in his basement, like, hitting on... this equipment does not seem reliable.
Season one was a week ago. Like, the last time she talked to him and Petey, like, died from it was a week, 2 weeks ago? Not long.
It's not long. You know, and then instantly she turns things on and his hand spasm starts. It was really, really good. Mark is wearing a red shirt in that scene in the basement, which is what any Mark is wearing in the opening titles.
Okay.
I don't think that has a deeper meaning. I think it's just a thematic tie.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole, everything about it is great. So the question she's asking, what was your mom's eye color? Do you know?
Me? I do, actually.
I don't. So I would have failed that question. Like I think it's probably green.
Yeah.
But I don't know for sure my mom's eye color.
Brown, all the way for my mom.
All right. Well, you did better than me.
Thank you.
It's also interesting that, like, that she goes to shame. So it's like memory and emotion are the two places she's going with this. I think that's interesting, and I think, you know, it's not necessarily a clue, but it's a thematic thing. The whole montage is so well done.
When you say montage, you said it earlier. You're just talking about when they're switching back and forth, yeah, and you're starting to get the memories.
It's not even switching back and forth. Montage is probably not an exact term for it, but like there's shots on top of shots. Mm-hmm. Like there's things where it's like half the shot is innie and half the shot is outie mark, yeah, and it's a really, really well done sequence. And ending with, who are you? And then, I don't know this for 100% sure, but I think that this is the first time we've cut to credits and it has been black on white instead of white on black.
Oh.
Meaning that usually it's white text on a black background, and this was a white background with black text.
Oh, that's cool. I hope that's true.
It's so good.
So, I imagine, and who knows, I don't think the integration is going to have totally taken yet. I think we're going to have any mark on the outside, but I believe that first we'll get sort of a story of how did, like, Mark's early days. Petey will be back. This is what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll find out. Maybe we'll see. I keep forgetting her name. Dr.
Ragave.
Maybe we'll see her in a flashback scene.
So you're anticipating a flashback episode next week.
Or like a flashback adjacent episode.
It could be.
I hope it's not totally that, because we have other things we want to know about.
Right.
But yes, I am anticipating some sort of flashback or overlap, or kind of like he's getting this memory download.
Yeah.
And so we experience it like a flashback episode, but he's just experiencing it in real time.
I do expect the reintegration to be more complicated than it's just...
It worked.
It worked.
Yeah, totally. That would be bad. I mean, no, maybe not bad, but that would be surprising.
It would be surprising. But I'm open to whatever. Like, I have complete trust in this show. Mm-hmm. So until they start dropping the ball, which they could, you know, good shows go bad sometimes, I'm up for whatever they have planned. So reintegration totally worked, or it completely failed, or anywhere in between, I'll roll with it.
All right.
Helena has a pouch, I'll roll with it. Like, I'm open to whatever.
After this episode, us recording together, I'm starting to feel more and more like... The Kears have pouches. No, the Egans.
Yeah. You could be on Team Pouch.
All right. You be on Team Goat. I'll be on Team Pouch.
Yeah. No, the goats, like, I'm sure those were goat-human hybrids at some level.
Wow. All right.
Like, I'm shocked you don't seem convinced by that.
I seem unconvinced.
Right. You do. Like, I... And maybe it's like the John Malkovich. Maybe the John Malkovich door is a hint, like there, because in John Malkovich, you go through the John Malkovich tunnel and you wind up in John Malkovich's head. Like, it's a real movie. If you haven't seen it, it's great. Actually, it's written by one of your favorite Charlie Kaufman, who wrote Eternal Sunshine.
Yes, I was going to say that. I knew that.
So maybe it's the same type of thing. Maybe there is a. Like, they send the goats through the goat door, and they wind up in the humans.
But we also know, for a fact, from the creators, that Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is also an influence on the show. So maybe we need to explore Kaufman's work.
I think so. Right. I know you love Eternal Sunshine. Yeah. I'm guessing you didn't like being John Malkovich.
I watched it once and haven't really felt like I'm dying to see it again. I've seen an adaptation.
I love adaptation.
About all these one time. So, yeah, let's revisit.
All right.
I mean, maybe we could, like, it could be fun to dissect some films that we think are inspirations in light of Severance, like even Shining. I've seen that once. Maybe watch that again in light of Severance.
Yep.
All right, listeners, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiPoto.
With the Sci-Fi Christians, signing off. Yeah, bye. What a show. It keeps us talking for an hour.
I know.